so good to be with you all. I love this season. I like Christmas a lot. I like all the other holidays too. And I have trouble with how we do them. I have, you know, if you want to engage my historical side, I'm going, it's supposed to be 12 days of Christmas. That song didn't come out of nowhere. It's actually, and I will always resist putting away any decorations before Epiphany, which is the end of the 12 days of Christmas that start on Christmas Day in the Christian calendar. But I kind of, as I get older, I'm liking the pagan cycles of the year, where you have a whole season from Samhain, which is roughly our Halloween, to Imlek, which I think commercially we've kind of gone to Valentine's Day. So you have from Halloween to Valentine's Day in terms of the decorations at the mall and the greeting cards you can buy. But in the ancient cycles of the year, it's Samhain to Imlek, and there's this whole season of being between the fullness of fall and the promise of spring. And it's the season of the year when it's darker than the rest of the time. And we've already passed the day when we had the shortest day and the longest nights on either side of it. The solstice, we're past. But it's still pretty dark, pretty much of the day. And so I like this time of year because we're done with most of the Christmas busyness. And we get to just be. And I need time every year. I need it all year round, but I'll grab it especially and hold it really close in the wintertime. I need time just to absorb my life, to be with the ones I love. I need darkness. I really do need darkness. And I think we've lost some of that appreciation for darkness in our culture. And it's so, so important, I think, to being human. And I think our having not attended to it is at the root of some of our problems, at least. So I wanted to talk about the peace of darkness, because it is what I wish for all of us in this season. And first, I have to, I think, just start with darkness, the idea of darkness. We get ourselves in trouble, I've noticed, over and over and over again when we do dualities, when everything is this or that, light or dark, black or white, yes or no, good or bad, and with the idea of darkness. Even I have found when I'm reading or listening to people who are trying to do an appreciative spin on darkness, when they're trying to say, oh, the wonderful darkness, they tend to do it. Darkness is the setup for light. The longest night of the year is special because that's when the light is reborn. Have you noticed this? So darkness is not a mistake. It's part of the cycle, and the darkest night is always before the darkest hour of the night is right before dawn. So you have all this so-called appreciation of darkness that is really, without the dark, you can't appreciate the light. It's all still about the light, it seems to me. And I want to push a little deeper into the dark than that. And I find in some of the poets an acknowledgement that the dark has its own charms, has its own life to it. It's not just the absence of light. And I have Wendell Berry for you, because, of course, Wendell Berry has a good thing to say about this. Well, oh, wait. It's on this piece of paper. Sorry. Wendell Berry, very short poem from early in his career called To Know the Dark. He says, to go in the dark with a light is to know the light. To know the dark. Go without sight. And find that the dark, too, blooms and sings and is traveled by dark feet and dark wings. It's nice. He also has another poem titled The Want of Peace, which kind of gets to the where I am right now, where I often end up by this time of the calendar year. This is the want of peace. This is why I want to sit in the dark and explore peace. Wendell Berry again. All goes back to the earth, and so I do not desire pride of excess or power, but the contentments made by men who have had little, the fisherman's silence receiving the river's grace, the gardener's musing on rose. I lack the peace of simple things. I am never wholly in place. I find no peace or grace. We sell the world to buy fire, our way lighted by burning men, and that has bent my mind and made me think of darkness and wish for the dumb life of brutes. And I hear, I'm sort of burrowing into the ground. I find that dumb life of brutes kind of an interesting phrase. Especially now, this was written, I think, back in the 70s. I didn't look up the date. But there's so much research, really fascinating research about trees, and what's going on in the ground there is not, it's not dumb in the sense of stupid. It's not even particularly silent. There's a lot of communication going on down there in the dark with the roots. And there's a part of us that needs to be grounded. You know, we need to live in our bodies and know our bodies connected to that ground and to the life of those roots. Our lives depend upon those roots. And Wendell Berry knows that. He's big on farming, and he knows that we are that connected. So this time of the year, there's no growing going on. It's the ground is resting. Well, I should say there's no growing above ground happening. In the ground, I think it's different. I'm not an expert on that. But I feel a need, not just to sit in the dark so I appreciate the light. And yes, the Christmas lights are not very pretty in full sunlight. They need the dark to shine. But there's something about the dark itself that has, there are things in it that bloom and sing and have dark feet and dark wings. The dark is not empty. It is not a nothing. So Blaise Pascal, I'm kind of skipping around here, but he's a 17th century philosopher and mathematician. And he says, and he uses language, he talks about man. And so it's hard sometimes to translate everything, and I don't want to dishonor his words, but I mean human beings. So, but he says, so what is man in the midst of nature? A nothing in comparison with the infinite, an all in comparison with nothingness, a mean between nothing at all, infinitely far from comprehending the extremes. The end of things and their principle are for him inevitably concealed in an impenetrable secret, equally incapable of seeing the nothingness whence he is derived and the infinity in which he is swallowed up. And he goes on soon after that passage to say, all of humanity's problems stem from man's inability to sit quietly in a room alone. And what he's saying is there's reality stretches out bigger and bigger and bigger infinitely, and it stretches in to the smaller and smaller and smaller things. And that scares us, is what Pascal's main argument is. We are afraid of those infinities stretching out all around us and in us. And there's the little infinities and the big infinities is how I translated them when I first read him years and years ago. And they frighten us. So we will not sit still in a room alone with ourselves and our infinities. And he sees that as the root of our problems. And this is some of what I feel a need at this season of the year, to stop and to sit and to learn, to practice sitting with those, sitting with who we are, sitting with our relationship with the rest of nature, the bigger and the smaller. Really, when he's talking about the things that stretch out infinitely outside of us and inside of us, he's talking about the web of all existence in our language, in our Unitarian Universalist language. It's the web. The web is our way of saying, I think, much the same thing. sometimes we kind of domesticate it. We have great songs, and it's a really lovely idea, and it's, but it's also a big thing. It's a thing that lives in the dark as well as in the light. It's a thing we can't see. And there is something, I think, to be learned by being willing to sit in the dark and think about this. And Pascal, I don't know if you're not familiar with Pascal, what he's really famous for is trying to untangle whether it matters whether we believe in God or not. He has this idea of a wager. So do we need to believe in God or not, was his question. So if you do believe in God and you're wrong, no big deal. If you don't believe in God and you're wrong, big deal, you're out of luck, there's no heaven for you. So he had this idea of it's a bet. Everybody makes a wager, and you might as well bet on the thing that gets you in the least trouble if you're wrong, right? So, but it all strikes me as being very fear-based. So I wonder, if we are sitting in Pascal's room all alone, feeling afraid, what can we do to shift that? Can we, instead of fearing these infinities, fearing the world around us and within us, can we look at it with curiosity, with wonder? Can we attend to what we find there? Listen, see, hear, what we think, even what we imagine. Can we meet all that with love, with delight? It's just a little shift. I think we need to practice being in the dark. We need to be... There are so many things we don't know. And being in the dark, when you shut off vision, we're very visual animals. We clearly are. And that is exploited all the time. That's a whole nother rant. But if we close that off by being in the dark, and we don't close it off entirely, you know, if you're in the dark for a while, you start being able to see some things. But can we be okay with not knowing? Can we use that as a chance to practice being okay with not knowing? Because frankly, even when we can see everything, we still don't know a whole lot of things. And we know this, and we try to pretend that everything is okay because we could know it. We could. Science will figure everything out eventually, right? I don't know. I'm beginning to think maybe not. I love science, but we're not going to know everything. So what if the dark, what if being in the dark is its own good thing? It's not just an occasion for the light to return. What if it then, I think, becomes a place where you can meet yourself in a new way? Perhaps it's... I wanted you to know this book. Learning to Walk in the Dark. It's Barbara Brown Taylor, who is a Christian. She's an Episcopalian priest, actually retired now, I believe. She's a beautiful writer, but she spent, I think, a year or so exploring the dark. This is one of her later books. But it's all about the dark. And she explores it from lots of different angles. It's fascinating. And one of the things that she says that I'm really curious about is that perhaps more than other ideas, darkness is a very personal thing. The experiences you had as a child, the way your parents treated you and your fear of the dark, or whether or not you ever had dark. So many of us now with light bulbs, totally changed human life. Totally, totally. We can control how much dark we have in our lives now in a way we couldn't for centuries, millennia. But the way you feel and interpret the dark is different from the way I do. And it's very personal. And I think that being in the dark, maybe in Pascal's room all by yourself, is a way to meet yourself in a different way. And it will be you that you meet. It won't be me. You won't experience it the same way I do. And the dark sometimes gives us access to a full range of emotions that we don't find are acceptable sometimes in our real lives. We all know society expects us to express certain emotions freely. It's lovely to see you is always welcome. gee, I'm really bummed out I crossed paths with you today, is not, you know, or I'm really, really having a hard day. That's not always okay to say. And sometimes even the people we love don't want to hear that from us. Sometimes the people who love us the most need to hear messages that we're okay. So being in the dark, alone, again, is a way to have a chance to just feel whatever we are feeling, which is often very frightening to us. Some of us are really good at feeling, some of us are not as good. So being in the dark can be a chance to practice. How would it feel if I just go and feel sad for a while, till the sun comes up maybe, until I turn the light back on? It's very interesting when we talk about spiritual practice. A lot of our spiritual practices, if supposedly the model is if you are consistent and faithful to these practices, they lead to, what is it, enlightenment, right? It's light again, enlightenment. Barbara Brown Taylor talks about, she uses the word endarkenment, which I find really intriguing. So what would it be to be endarkened as well as enlightened? I don't think they need to compete. This is the point. I don't think it's an either or. I think both light and dark are part of our life. They are part of the web. They are part of our world. The best poetry that evokes the cosmos and our place in it relies on both light and dark very consistently. And, you know, if you go out at night with a flashlight, and especially if it's a good flashlight, meaning it puts out a good strong beam of light, you ever noticed all you can see is right there in that flashlight beam? You can't see outside unless you have a red filter and, you know, night vision and all that. But really, if you light something up thoroughly, you can't see what's around. You see it even less than you would with no light. So what if we need to be endarkened to really know ourselves, to really know the world that we inhabit, to really encounter light and love? You know, we say the spirit of light and light and love. Maybe it's the spirit of light and dark and love and many, many other things. And I'm reminded of all the mystical traditions in all the world, you know, world's religions. There's even the paths that lead to enlightenment, they often go through what's called a dark night of the soul. And some of the, you know, and these aren't the texts we all read a lot and quote from. They're harder. but there is now and then in the really great classics, the ones who really dig in and say, what is this about? This feeling abandoned and lost and in the dark. The spiritual teachers who look at that, they say, this is a gift. This is a gift. And sometimes, again, it gets spun. This is the gift because it's what allows the light to come. But the really good ones, the ones you read and you chew over, John of the Cross is sort of the classic. But this itself is a way you meet yourself and you meet God in this dark. So I'm just curious. I'm curious about what light and dark mean to us. We layer them with lots of meaning. It's interesting to me, it occurred to me as I was thinking about all this the other day, sleep. Sleep's become a really bad problem for all of us. Maybe it's the age that I am. Sleep just becomes more of an issue. And a lot of my friends who are about the same age, sleep is, hormones are shifting or have shifted, and it messed up our sleep cycles, and we just can't find that again. And at the same time, we're reading all these, we're starting to worry about the health of our hearts and impending death, and we're hearing all these studies that if you don't get just the right amount of sleep, not too much, not too little, it sets you up for a heart attack. It's like, oh no, what do I do? Well, I started reading about these days before we had light bulbs, right? when people were in the dark, when they were in the dark. So there's candles, but that's different than a good flashlight or a good electrical bulb or LED or, you know, whatever. People would go to bed, and they wouldn't sleep 8 hours in a row. 8 hours in a row actually apparently wasn't really standard. And it doesn't, when people try to recreate that environment for sleep, people don't sleep 8 solid hours. They wake up, or they're half awake and half asleep. They probably had richer dream lives than we do. There appears to be a different level of consciousness that happens in these sort of in-between hours. I'm like, huh. But now we've told everybody, you must sleep 8 hours or 7.5 or 7, or maybe 8's too much. 9 might be way too much. 6 is definitely not enough. And we're all going, and we're all putting our phone, we're getting apps on our phone so we can put them right beside our pillow so it can tell us whether we slept well or not. And I'm like, well, what if we just, and I, of course, a lot of us live in places we can't turn out all the lights. There's, you know, lights from the neighbors, lights from the highways. But what if we could? What if we could just have dark when it's dark? And during the winter, we'd have a lot of dark. And during the summer, we'd have less, but it's okay because we're busier. You know, well, we don't actually, most of us do agriculture. Some of us do agricultural things and gardening. I know a lot of us do gardening things. But what if? What would we know that's different? What would we understand about the way the world spins around the sun and the way we inhabit the earth together? I wonder. And would we have more peace? I'm convinced if we could learn to sit without the fear and program our brains to respond to the unknown with something else, like curiosity or wonder, that we would have much more peace than we do, both during the winter and during the rest of the year as well. So I hang on. I hang on to the idea of the winter holidays as a season. I need this season of winter. And I need messages that tell me it's okay to be quiet, to be dark, to not know. And even the emotions that are in the range that we sometimes associate with the dark. This is what we do when we do dark and light as a duality, and we start assigning things. We know one is good and one is bad. And then, yeah, just as a side note, we mix in our ways of dealing with race, and that compounds all kinds of ugliness in our lives. But if we could learn not to think of them as a duality. I like the I don't want to go off mic, but the yin-yang symbol. It's still black and white, but see how the boundaries are curved, and there's a spot of each in the other. It's a symbolic representation that they're not two separate things. They coexist, and they don't coexist in, like, it's not meant to be like two separate pieces of a puzzle that fit together. This is telling us you can't take them apart. They exist together. And so some of us need seasons, and winter's not always the right season, but it's good to have voices that tell us it's okay to have a full range of feelings. And probably the problem with problem feelings isn't that we have them, it's what we do with them. It's how we react to them, it's how we run away from them, it's how we try to stuff them down instead of letting them flow through. I ran across an On Being podcast with Joanna Macy about a poem of Rainer Maria Rilke's. But he's talking about the dark, this poem. And I'm sorry, I didn't write down which poem it was. But she was commenting on how, as she read this poem, she's hearing that we don't have to always be brimming with hope. There are sometimes hopeless seasons. There are times when we are not always optimistic. And she says, it's okay not to be optimistic. and I'm quoting from her now, Buddhist teachings say feeling that you have to maintain hope can wear you out. So just be present. The biggest gift that you can give is to be absolutely present. And when you're worrying about whether you're hopeful or hopeless or pessimistic or optimistic, who cares? This is a, you know, an interview, so this is, she's speaking. The main thing is that you're showing up, that you're here, and that you're finding ever more capacity to love this world, because it will not be healed without it. That's what's going to unlock our intelligence and our ingenuity and our solidarity for the healing of the world. And actually, she didn't say unlock, she said unleash, which is even better. I like that. That's what it's our being present. So I need the darkness just to have time to sit and be and feel my feelings and feel the world around me and look for those things with dark feet and dark wings. Rainer Maria Rilke has a poem I want to read to you. It says, "You darkness that I come from, I love you more than all the fires that fence in the world. For the fire makes a circle of light for everyone, and then no one outside learns of you. But the darkness pulls in everything, shapes and fires, animals and myself, how easily it gathers them, powers and people. And it is possible a great presence is moving near me. I have faith in nights." So I wish for you this season of darkness a moment or two to explore that darkness, to sit in that darkness or walk in that darkness, to slow down, to encounter mystery, to rub up against something bigger and wonder what it is, to feel your full range of feelings, maybe to be out of control or at least at a loss for explanations. Can you pay attention and not be distracted by fear? I hope that the answer to that is yes. And if it isn't yet, I think it becomes more possible with practice. And no matter what I wish is that you know that no matter how skillful we are at our feelings, at observing, at seeing, at walking in the dark without tripping, we are held by a wonderful web, by a cosmos that is bigger and more wondrous than we can imagine, although I love our imaginings. So I want to leave you with a bit written by UU minister and theologian Rebecca Parker. And I don't have a title for it. I don't know whether she has a title herself. But it's clearly about, it's rooted in this season of the year. She said, "Perhaps for a moment the typewriters will stop clicking, the wheels stop rolling, the computers desist from computing, and a hush will fall over the city. For an instant, in the stillness, the chiming of celestial spheres will be heard as Earth hangs poised in the crystalline darkness and then gracefully tilts. Let there be a season when holiness is heard and the splendor of living is revealed. Stunned to stillness by beauty, we remember who we are and why we are here. There are inexplicable mysteries. We are not alone in the universe. There moves a wild one whose gestures alter Earth's axis toward love. In the immense darkness, everything spins with joy. The cosmos enfolds us. We are caught in a web of stars, cradled in a swaying embrace, rocked by the holy night, babes of the universe. Let this be the time we wake to life as spring wakes, in the moment of winter solstice." May it be so for you, for me, for as many people as possible. Because when we show up and know ourselves to be babes of the universe, love that, this is where we find our energy. This is where we find the momentum to go out into the world, to be with each other, to change that world, to spread the love that we know the world needs. May it be so. May we be so. Thank you.